fucking good. Okay, so I think everybody is here to join. So it's after 4 o'clock. Why don't we start the meeting? Thank everyone for joining us this evening. Can we have a roll call, Danielle?
Certainly. Vice Chair Latchford? Vice Chair Latchford?
I'm here.
Commissioner Mason?
Here.
Commissioner Newell?
He's on, you're on mute, Dave. Oh, sir.
Commissioner Newell?
Here.
Thank you. Commissioner Silverson?
Here.
Chair Beasley?
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Mike, could you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this evening?
Sure. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Danielle, do we have any call audience waiting out there?
No, Chair Beasley, I didn't receive any.
Okay, well then we'll just breeze past that one and head for staff liaison report.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm having some difficulty hearing. I'm getting some repetitive background noise. Are you getting, anyone else getting that? Or?
Is it only when I'm talking?
Okay. Let me try shutting down and logging back in. I'm not getting a clear audio here.
We'll wait for you, John.
Yes, Chair, I that as well. I did have to leave the meeting and then come back in. And when I came back in, that seemed to resolve the problem.
Okay, so you had feedback too then, Wendy?
I did, yes.
Okay, well, John should be with us here in a second.
Okay, can you, I'm back on now. I can hear you. Seems to have solved the issue.
Okay, I guess Wendy had the same problem, and she went in and out also. So. Okay, well, let's proceed. Mr. Gephardt.
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Just a couple comments this evening on our staff liaison report. The town is already in progress updating its capital improvement plan. So that's... just wanted to make you aware of that. We are kind of going through a little bit different of a process than I think we've utilized historically, but hopefully the results, the end result is at least equivalent, if not superior, to what we have provided in terms of transparency and estimates of upcoming capital programs and projects. We are, as I mentioned earlier, actually prior to the meeting, we are preparing for our auditors in finance. They will be out for final field work the first week of November. And so we are really busy in finance working to make sure that we are really completely prepared for them and ready for them when they arrive. And then last but not least, I want to add that I am still working on a potential refunding of some water debt that we have. That's kind of been delayed a little bit. We had a request to WIFA, which was one of our loan providers, to release some reserve funds, and they had to take that to their board. So we're hoping all of that kind of gets squared away. And I've actually got a call tomorrow with our bond underwriters to see whether that's going to move forward or not. The markets have shifted a little bit. So I hope to get an update on that as to whether that's still financially advantageous to the town moving forward. So those are kind of the three items I wanted to highlight for you this evening.
I think there's a fourth one, GFOA awards.
Oh,
congratulations to the town. What tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. So the town, I'll highlight our procurement award as well. The town was awarded the Distinguished Budget Award back in May, and it kind of flew under the radar because we were so busy with budget preparations and whatnot that I think we got the email and it just got lost in the shuffle. But on an annual basis, we also submit for the Certificate of Achievement Award for Excellence in Financial Reporting, which is submitting our CAFR to GFOA. There's a number of criteria that our CAFR needs to satisfy in order to be awarded that. And I believe this was the 26th consecutive year that we've been awarded the Certificate of Achievement Award for Excellence in Financial Reporting. And then kind of in conjunction with that, but a separate award, but we were awarded the PAFR award as well. And I want to say that it was the ninth, I may be mistaken, Wendy would probably know, but I want to say it's the ninth consecutive year that we've been awarded the PAFR award, which is the popular annual financial report that's also submitted to GFOA. And really that's a condensed kind of synopsis of the town's finances, includes kind of a combination of both CAFR items and budget items in that, but really meant for the general public to kind of provide that broad overview of the town's finances and how we're doing and how we look. So that positive as well. And then we were awarded an award with our procurement department as well. I should know this off the top of my head, but I don't. But there was that's an annual award. There's a professional procurement association that we submit for, and again, really highlighting the excellent work that our procurement folks do on behalf of the town, keeping us all out of trouble in terms of satisfying state law and good, implementing good best practices for public procurement. So we've received, I think in the last 4, 5, 6 months now, about 4 different awards. And given the limited staff that we have, it's impressive. The level, the quality, the amount of work that our team is doing, very, very proud of them. They work extremely, extremely hard. So,
hey, congratulations. You should be proud of it.
Thank you.
Anybody else have any comments, maybe?
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Great. Long process.
That's great. Okay. Has everyone had a chance to take a look at the September meeting minutes? Any comments?
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to accept them.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. They are accepted as is. You are back on again, Mr. Gebhardt.
So I'm going to toss this over to Wendy Gomez. She will provide the presentation this evening for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. I'm just going to share my screen so I can bring up the PowerPoint for you. Switch to my here we go. Okay. Great. You all can see that okay, right?
Yes.
Okay, yep. Thank you. So yes, I'm pleased to be presenting our financial update through August tonight for fiscal year 2021. We are going to cover the usual funds today, the general fund, highway fund, and the community center fund. Talking about the general fund revenues first, things continue to trend very positive in all of our categories. Local sales taxes, we're already at just under 20% of budget through August at about $3.5 million. Though that area is doing better primarily due to strong construction collections that we're seeing, as well as retail and online collections. Those categories are doing very well. On our state shared revenue side, those are trending overall positive. We have been watching the state shared sales taxes closely because those are they're a little less than what we would want to be seeing compared to budget through August, but it's early in the fiscal year. We have brought down the year-end estimate for those slightly, but we'll continue to watch it and monitor those closely. In our charges for services category, that's no surprise there, really. I mean, we expect those to be trending low right now just due to closures of some facilities and revenue sources that are being impacted by COVID. In our licenses and permits category, the budget of 1.6, we are at about half of that already. That is attributable to strong commercial activity. We had a large project come in August that posted in August, but residential activity continues to be strong as well with single family residential permits. We went ahead and brought down the budget for single family residential permits to 225 this year, just in case, not knowing with COVID. And that permitting activity that we've seen through August and even September, I believe we're at about 100 already for permits issued. And then our all other category, budget of 8.2, actuals through August at about 5.6. Obviously, the big portion of that is the CARES funding, which we did receive in August. So that is the reason for the large actuals there and the percentage of budget. Overall, in the general funds, we're at just over $12 million through August, or 28% of budget. Again, that's going to look high just because of the CARES funding having been posted in August. And we are expecting the revenues to trend a bit over budget, and that's due to those additional permit revenues that we were talking about. The local sales taxes, you know, that category is doing very well also. And so as we continue to see more collections and progress through the fiscal year, we may even look at bringing up those year-end estimates too. On the expenditure side for the general fund, actuals for personnel are at about $3.1 million through August, or 10.7% of budget. Those are appearing below budget right now, but that's really just attributable to mostly the timing of payrolls. We had just one payroll that posted in July due to when they hit and when we accrue the payrolls. So that's the reason for that there. But there is also some slight personnel vacancy savings that we're seeing from either holding positions vacant or just typical delays in refilling positions. On our O&M side, actuals are about $1.2 million through August. Those are low at this point in time during the fiscal year, just through August. But again, that's typical as departments kind of ramp up their spending and need a bit of time to get things in line and projects and that sort of thing. We are expecting those to come in near budgeted levels by the end of the fiscal year. Capital, a big chunk of that is IT items. grant-funded vehicles and that sort of thing. So I would expect those to be low still through August, but we do expect those to come in on budget still for the fiscal year. And then our transfers out, pretty easy peasy, clear there. The actuals through August are just the debt service transfers that we always make at the beginning of the fiscal year. And then the remainder of that are remaining transfers to the CIP fund for our capital projects. So those will come in on budget for the fiscal year. Overall, total general fund expenditures, we're at just under $5.2 million through August, or 11.6% of budget. We are expecting those to come in slightly below budget this time, just due to a bit of O&M savings and a smidge of personnel savings as well, vacancy savings. Here's the chart through August for the general fund. You can see the revenues of $12.2 million for the current year actual. Obviously, the big chunk of that is the CARES funding. But even when you back that out, we're still above last fiscal year, which is great. On the expenditure side, we're at about 5.2 compared to 6.4. The bulk of the difference on that is probably that payroll that I was mentioning, the one payroll in July. I believe we had we probably had two payrolls that posted last fiscal year, or possibly we had one that was split between two fiscal years. And then also the $6.4 million from last fiscal year included the budgeted $500,000 PSPRS payment that we had posted in August. We have not yet made that payment this fiscal year, but just comparing to last year actuals, that's the reason for that higher figure last year. Moving on to the highway fund, on the revenue side, the HERF revenues are looking fine. Those are still coming in at budgeted levels. And on the expenditure side, the expenditures total about $175,000 or 4.5% of budget through August. Those are always going to be low in the highway fund just because of the timing of pavement preservation. That's the big bulk of the expenditures in that fund. So those will happen later in the fiscal year, as well as another CIP capital project in there for a Lambert Lane overlay that's going to hit later in the fiscal year. So the expenditures in that fund are still expected to come in on budget at this time. Here's the chart for the highway fund. It's rather boring. There's not a whole lot going on there, as I mentioned in the last slide. Really, the difference on the revenues at about $600,000 through August of this year compared to $800,000 last year, that is almost solely attributable to a one-time amount last year that all cities and towns in Arizona were provided through the state budget. So that is really the only reason for the difference there. And then the expenditures you can see are flat to last fiscal year. Moving on to the community center fund, on the revenue side, our contracted revenues are currently just under 14% of budget, or $487,000 through August. We have obviously some seasonality there with the revenues, but those are trending as expected. Town operating revenues are sharply below budget, and that is just due to the fact that the facility was closed. I will mention, so we reopened October 5th, I believe. And I will mention that we're going to need to watch those closely because we did not anticipate the facility would be closed that long in the budget. And so we may be bringing those down later on the fiscal year. We'll just have to see how things go as the facility's open now and just watching what those revenues will start looking like. The half-cent sales tax revenues are trending as expected, just under $400,000 or 16% of budget. The remote collections that I mentioned earlier and retail are helping that revenue category. The expenditures, contracted expenditures, are trending as expected. Those are just over 17% of budget through August, or about just under $800,000. And then the town operating expenditures, those are obviously below budget just due to the facility being closed with COVID. And I mentioned the revenues and the potential shortfall there. We'll obviously see some savings on the expenditure side too. And those may offset each other. We will need to take a closer look at that as the fiscal year progresses. Here's the chart for the Community Center Fund through August. Revenues are just about flat compared to last fiscal year, which again, that's, you know, considering that the facility's closed, the contracted revenues and the sales tax are really driving that and helping to offset those shortfalls. and the expenditures just a smidge under where they were last fiscal year. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Anybody have any questions, Wendy?
Have we spent any of the CARES money yet?
We have, yes. We have started spending some of those funds. So we have a pretty detailed budget lined out of what we had planned on those expenditures, you know, PPE, all kinds of different areas. And yes, we have started spending some of those funds because I've been seeing the expenditures come in.
Also on your residential permits, you know, looking ahead to next year or so, are they still increasing, leveling off, decreasing? What do you predict?
Let me pull up the file that I have on that. I can tell you kind of what we had plugged in there. I believe we had a bit of an increase. And then we've always, you know, probably for the last, gosh, 3, 4, maybe even 5 years, we've been watching very closely build out and the fact that we are facing that in our future. Whenever that happens, I will mention that it's been a slower process getting to that point, but we have anticipated that for some time. Let me just open up that file. I can kind of tell you, I can give you specifics if you'd like on what we were looking at. We did, as I mentioned, bring down the current year from 300. I think we were originally looking at 300 and we brought it down to 225. But for just as an example, just a smidge up. So, you know, maybe around more like the 325 level for a couple of years. And then we start bringing it down from there. And as I mentioned, for the last several years, we have been forecasting that decline in the outer year. So, you know, 5 years out, we've forecasted more in the 150,000 or I'm sorry, 150 SFR permit range, for those future years when we start, seeing the impact of build out. And obviously, that's assuming no annexations.
So we need more land, huh? Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just a couple of questions, if I could.
Fire away, John.
First of all, I want to say that overall, I think everybody should be pleased that we're getting the results that we are, particularly after some of the conversations we had months ago. I just wanted to jump back for a minute to the golf operations, the contracted revenue. And in your write-up, you note that we're estimating at the end of the year that revenues will come in under $325,000. That appears, and of course, in the schedule, it shows that that's coming from the food and beverage, which would be the restaurant. And then the second line item, merchandise and other. Mm-hmm. Can we get some additional detail to that? Why do we think it's going to, I guess, number one, what is the status of both of those? I'm not sure what merchandise is. And secondly, you know, why we think it's going to come in so low under budget?
Certainly, Commissioner Latchford, I can reach out to the general manager over there, Bernie Eaton, and see if he can provide some additional details for some of those categories. The merchandise is primarily the pro shop, I believe. And, you know, that could have, COVID could be impacting that, quite frankly, would be kind of my early assumption without having some additional details from him. But we can certainly reach out and have him provide those details if the commission desires that.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Do you have anything else, John?
I have a few questions.
Fire away.
If we can stick on golf for a second. I know that we have a new vendor providing the data and operating the golf courses and putting together the C2 report. But it is very difficult to draw apples to apples comparisons, is obviously they're reporting different things in different light items. I know that the new report for this August has no line item for utilities. Can you confirm that the golf courses are paying for water? And if so, what new budget items contain that expense for the water?
Yes, Chair Beasley, Commissioner Newell, The utility costs are absolutely included in those figures. The bulk of those utility costs would be included in the maintenance line item, and then a portion of those utilities in the general and administrative line. We've been talking about the likelihood of splitting out those utility costs to reflect how they were with the previous contractor and the fact that they were a separate line item. And just given that they're a sizable expenditure for them, I think we probably will begin doing that with the September financials, is breaking those out and showing that separately on the C2, just to provide greater transparency and clarity.
Thank you. And when comparing this C2 to last C2, last August C2s, I noticed that the estimated loss number for the courses seems much lower this year than last year. Can you confirm that it looks like the size of that loss is going to be significantly lower from what we had as of August 2019 to this August 2020?
Sure. Yeah, we actually reached out to the general manager on that this morning. Let me just pull up some of those details on there. Sorry, I get so many emails in a day. let's see. The forecasts are conservative at this point, just the fact that it's got only 2 months of actuals. Can you repeat your question and see if I can pull up some additional details in my email?
Sure. I was just, you know, when I compare last year's C2 for August, the August report, and this year's C2 from the August report, that total loss number at the bottom, the net, what the losses for the courses, it seems like the number is much lower for this year. They're much less, they're closer to being considerably closer to being profitable than last summer. I was wondering if there was a specific reason for that. Does that mean that the HOA payments have been included in that, or is the course just performing significantly better this summer?
No, Commissioner Newell, the HOA amounts would not be in there. If I had to guess, it is probably due to increased golf activity. There could be some efficiency savings there as well with the new operator, just things looking more positive. But I know that golf in general, the activity over there, especially with COVID, has actually been a positive for the facility. And so I would guess that that's primarily due to improvement on the golf side of things, with additional revenues, reduced expenses, either streamlining on their personnel side and those sorts of things.
Well, I certainly hope that this improved performance continues. The last question I had was, I know we had some payments that we were going to be able to stop for our maintenance equipment. I don't remember if it was a purchase or a lease, but I knew those were going to end early in the fiscal year. Have those already ended? Is that one of the reasons for this improved performance, because we've stopped making those maintenance payments?
Commissioner Newell, that wouldn't be a reason for the improved performance just through August, because those leases ended in September.
Okay, so we'll actually see more improvement moving forward. Excellent. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Wendy, is Push Ridge included in these numbers?
That is a good question, Chair Beasley. I believe they are. I'm sorry, I would actually need to confirm that. And I wasn't sure if Mary Jacobs was on the call. Dave, do you know with certainty if Push is in there? But I believe they are.
Yeah, I don't know with certainty. I know that was something that we were looking at, but I can't remember. I can't recall one way or the other. That's something that I would have to research and get back to you on.
Yeah, I don't know of any I don't know of any changes to that. So yes, my assumption would be that the push activity is in there.
Okay. Yeah. I'd kind of like to have a confirmation on that. If we can.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes, fire away.
Thank you. We'll definitely look and see. As you know, there have been some changes in our original projections. So we will need to be updating our projections. And I don't know that that has been included just yet in terms of we just developed a maintenance plan through January. So the town council did vote to extend to HSL an additional 4 months to determine whether or not they're going to be leasing the push course. So in the meantime, we are not operating golf. We weren't planning to operate golf. That was something that we had projected without, the inclusion of those expenses. So the original projections had expenses through the end of September, and now we're going to have to add back some additional expenses. We estimate about $60,000 to $70,000 between now and the end of January that was not originally budgeted. So we're going to need to be doing some finagling. That is a relatively recent development, and I think we'll have better numbers in the next month's financials for you.
Thank you. Kind of a question comment. I don't know if you saw the Wall Street Journal article last week about the snowbirds. And it was primarily focused on Canadian snowbirds' inability of getting to the United States, and specifically Arizona and, of course, Florida. Do we have any idea at all what the impact of snowbirds happen to be on our say sales tax revenues, I mean, that type of thing? It's going to be a little bit different here in the Tucson area than it is, say, down in Yuma and some other areas which are going to be materially impacted. But if those people can't get to us, does that hurt us very much?
Chair Rieslam, I mean, yes, it could have an impact if it's enough folks that couldn't make their way down here. You know, obviously that's losing a little bit of local sales tax. I actually, you know, something that's been on my mind lately is just the fact that the weather's warmer down here. And with COVID, I was actually hopeful that people would come down here in greater numbers. To be able to be outside and feel a bit safer. So, you know, my hope is maybe there would be some offset there. But yes, I mean, that's why we're watching the revenues very closely, because if people can't make it down here, I mean, absolutely, the community's dependent on those snowbirds. So that's something that we'll definitely have to keep in mind.
The article is focused on Canadians because they can't drive across the border. I don't know what the impact would be on other people in northern parts of the United States that would have second homes down here or something like that. Just kind of a wild question.
Yeah, I know. Unfortunately,
does Visit Tucson have that type of information? Excuse me. Does Visit Tucson maybe have that type of information on the demographics of who are snowbirds and where they come from?
Commissioner Newell, they may. I'm not aware in particular of those metrics, but they certainly might. I mean, we could explore that.
Gentlemen, since this is basically advertises the financial update, I think we're starting to get off track. Just wanted to let you know that.
I have just one quick question, Wendy. The general fund. You've already changed the year-end estimate, $500,000 less of a deficit. So I just want to get your thoughts on if that, if it continues to trend that way, is that what you're thinking? It seems pretty early to already make the big change. And are there any thoughts on applying that elsewhere? You know, is that $500,000 plus maybe if it continues, can that be money be used somewhere else?
Commissioner Solverson, primarily the difference to budget, the positive outlook compared to budget, is on the revenue side. It's our commercial permit revenues. As I mentioned, we had a fairly large project come in August. And so that's driving that overage on the revenues primarily. And then on the expenditure side, we forecasted just a bit of with the CARES funding. We've got a lot of projects and things budgeted in there, and it's probably unlikely that we will spend every penny of that in this current fiscal year. And so we have a difference plugged in there in terms of some potential savings in the current year. We could certainly explore that conversation in terms of utilizing some of that. I mean, that would be a manager or town manager or CFO decision, but you know, there is certainly the opportunity to do that.
That's still pretty early in the year too, so
right.
I want to make sure that that exists before you make any commitments elsewhere.
Right.
Okay.
We have any other questions for Wendy? If not, thank you very much. Appreciate the report.
You're welcome, Chair Beasley.
Mr. Gebhardt, I guess you're back on again.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. Now's the time that we'll kind of get back into our financial and budgetary policies. If you'll recall at the last meeting, we went over a number of different draft policies, had a lot of good comments from you, tried to incorporate those comments into the draft before you this evening. So I guess before we get into the new policies, kind of wanted to review or go through a quick review of the policies that we covered at the last Budget Finance Commission meeting and see whether I had appropriately incorporated your comments and concerns with the policies that were presented at the last meeting. And I think really, not to pigeonhole this, but I think most of the comments were in relation to the investment policy. So especially as it relates to that policy, hopefully I've adequately addressed most, if not all, hopefully all of the comments that were presented in relation to that policy. I think, you know, the other policies, most of the comments were pretty benign. You know, like, for instance, policy 1-2, I believe one of the comments was to change the title of the policy from long-range financial planning to strategic long-range financial planning. So just some simple edits and updates to the rest of the policies. I believe, if I remember correctly, Commissioner Mason had an issue with excise tax, maybe defining that. And as I looked at that policy and where it was, where excise tax was included in that policy, I thought that it was actually an inappropriate utilization of excise tax. So I just actually changed it to sales tax, because sales tax is really what we collect here at the town primarily for operating revenues, and excise tax just didn't seem to quite fit. I'm not sure why that term was utilized in prior financial policy or the prior financial policy of the town. So so any questions, comments, additional concerns with the policies, especially the ones that we dealt with at the last Budget and Finance Commission meeting?
Good. I have a few, David.
Okay, fire away.
I guess on a broad basis, for starters, do we go back through the timing when this is to go to the town council? I mean, what's the actual schedule on this thing that we're supposed to get to?
That's an excellent question. I believe we wanted to have this wrapped up next month, but let me just verify that, find that email where I kind of, I believe it was in an email where we kind of set out the schedule. And I'm having Wendy's problem here, too many emails. I believe we wanted to have it wrapped up next month so that we could actually present in December. That's what I seem to recall.
So we have this meeting and next meeting.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I still have quite a few issues on the investment side.
Okay.
But I think it's slightly broader than the investments. I think this investments policy should really be banking and investments. And the reason I say that is that they're integrated together. And I think it should include policy statements on selection of your banks, selection of your investment advisors, selection of your safekeeping agents, not the how to do it, but the policy of what kind of frequency do you do that kind of thing? And how do you do it? Via, say, an RFP type of a process. The other alternative is to have an investments policy and then somehow break out the service sector for those investments and banking into a separate policy. And I'll kind of leave that to you, but you see what I'm kind of getting at here is that these things do integrate together, and in order to accommodate or accomplish what you're trying to get to, You've got to do some service selections.
Yeah, I think, Chair Beasley, I heard that comment at the last meeting, and as I considered it, and I'm still chewing on it, truthfully, just because, and I don't disagree with the comment. I really don't. I think the challenge I have is the integration between this policy and our procurement policy, which is its own separate policy, which is outside of the financial policies of the town. And so I think, I think maybe some broad statements that we will examine our banking relationships and investment advisors, every 5 years or something to that effect might hopefully, just kind of some kind of broad statement there as a policy might deal with that. It's when I heard it at the last meeting, it seemed like it was kind of morphing more into some procurement type issues. And, and even now, even tonight, talking about selection and how that occurs and so forth, whether it's an RFP or an RFQ so I think that's where it kind of gets more into the realm of procurement. And we already have a procurement policy that kind of governs and dictates those types of things. So I certainly don't want the policies to be in conflict with each other or to be a duplication of one another.
Well, do you have a procurement policy that specifically addresses banks, investment advisors?
No, I don't believe we do.
Mr. Chairman, basically we are required to follow the state procurement code. And so our local procurement code is a reflection of what the state requirements are. There is a section in the state procurement code that talks about the service industry, and they lump a whole bunch of different, you know, types of things in that particular area and talk about, you know, when you have to and that sort of thing. But one of the things I think that again, as Mr. Gephardt said, you know, if there are opportunities to buy off of other contracts that are already in place, then that really is a management decision about whether or not we go through a full competitive process or we use some other procurement vehicle. And so I think what I would encourage you to do instead is, what is the outcome that you're trying to achieve? Because what I'm hearing is process. And process is really that's procedure. But if you can maybe articulate for us a little bit more, what kind of outcome or what are the things that you're trying to protect the town from or to do or that sort of thing, rather than this is the process that we have to use in order to select our. We just selected a bank last year, and we went through a process and we did a whole analysis of which ones give us better service and the whole financial analysis and that kind of thing. And we did that in great detail after having a 10-year contract. We're permitted to have a 10-year contract. That contract was, you know, was outdated at that point, and it was time. And so, you know, so again, those things are already in place and we're, you know, we're doing that. But again, the council's not involved in the selection of any of our vendors. That is purely a staff function. And those processes are already very clearly dictated in state law and in our local procurement code.
No, I understand where you're coming from, but I don't think it's a process. It's a policy that you select an investment advisor via an RFP, as an example. It is a policy that you go out and select a safekeeping agent, whether that safekeeping agent is independent or part of your banking services relationship. Those are critical elements to manage investments, to manage your cash flow, to manage against fraud and misrepresentation, to, for instance, select brokers and dealers. It's more than just a process. It's a policy to evaluate and to protect the city and to provide quality services. You know, if it's in the procurement side of the equation, don't have a problem with that. I just think that it has to be in a policy somewhere that it's done, and it's done with a certain frequency. That's the only place I'm coming.
Well, if it's in another policy, maybe that should just be referenced in this policy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if that procurement is already there and there's a policy that covers it, we don't need to duplicate it. Mm-hmm. There are some issues that I continue to have, for instance, on Section 6.0 on investment types. I think what you're doing and following state statutes and allowing the town to make investments on indebtedness of state, county, city, school district bonds, those kinds of things. There's several bullet points in here. Can get you into deep doggy doo-doo with regard to inadequate quality of those securities. So I think if you're going to buy some of this stuff, you need to set a rating criteria to purchase it. Same issue with money market mutual funds. There are money market mutual funds and there are money market mutual funds. Not all money market mutual funds are marked to market to a dollar every day. The only ones that are marked to market to a dollar every day basically are treasury-based securities. So I think you need to be careful in terms of the terminology you use on some of these things.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, can I have a chance to address that first concern regarding the state, school district, other local government type issuances?
Absolutely.
I heard that comment at the last meeting in your draft. I added a sentence at the end of 6.7, 6.8, 6.9 that said ratings of these investments must be AAA or equivalent. Does that not address your concerns?
That does address my concern. I did not see that. I'm sorry.
That begs the next question I have. Do you have the most recent? I can't imagine this not being the case because and maybe I didn't attach the right file, but do you not have the most recent update? Because even on 6.10, 6.10, I added a statement at the end of that that says money market mutual funds must always be priced at $1 per share. So hopefully I have addressed these, you know, some of these concerns on 6.0, but if you're working off a different document, I need to make sure that you have the right, most current document.
Yeah, the thing that was sent out that looks at, for instance, 6.7, it just simply references bonds or other evidences of indebtedness of the state, county, city, or school district. Does not make any statement at all with regard to AAA ratings.
Okay.
Yeah. What page are you looking at, Jim? What page are you on?
I am on, let's see here. I'm actually on page 26 of that whole pile of stuff that was sent out.
I have the same sheet that Jim has, so I think, and that was the new one that you had marked on the agenda.
Yeah, because it changed from bullet points that we saw previously to actual numbers, 6.7, 6.8, 6.9. Mm-hmm. But I don't see anything here with regard to AAA ratings.
Okay, hold on for a second. Let me.
And that's why I raised the issue again.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. That helps me. Let me look at the attachment here. This is not the most current. That is an old attachment. I'm sorry. Let me. I apologize for this. Tobin, quick question. Is it possible that I can share my screen on this item or maybe?
It was properly noticed. So the answer is yes, but everybody has to be able to see it. So share your screen with everybody so they can see it.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. That's what I need. Okay, let me try to share my screen here for the technologically challenged.
That would be me.
Okay, can you all see my screen?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. I apologize for this. This snafu. Apparently, obviously, as you have different versions and iterations of these things going, apparently, this has got to be completely my fault. So I'll take the fall here. This is what yes. you ought to see in your packet this evening.
Okay, I see where you're referencing the AAA then. Okay.
Yeah, so I did, again, I tried to incorporate, here's the money market mutual funds must always be priced at $1 per share. I apologize that you're not looking at this version this evening. That is completely my fault.
Okay, all right. Well, then I think you've probably answered all my questions.
Well, it's okay. I mean, I want you to be able to have confidence that your concerns were heard and properly addressed. So I don't know if you want to take a quick moment to read through this, Jim, and other commission members. But
why don't you just send out, speaking for me, why don't you just send out the revised document?
Or if you want to wait till you put in tonight's changes, then do that.
Well, that's what I mean. You know, after we get through this evening. But.
Sure.
Do we want to just go through this, do it like this, and read it?
Because we'll probably give it one final review anyway, go through everything. And
can we see what you have for 7.3, David? I'm a little confused on the very last line of what was sent out for 7.3.
So
existing cooperative contract. How is that relate? Is that referencing what your procurement policy is and yes. service provider?
Yes, that's correct. Is if there's a cooperative contract where another, basically what happens there is another local government will go through an RFP process. Which is, you know, similar to an RFP process that they would go through, but because they're going through it, we would piggyback onto their contract that they have either negotiated or established through that process. So it saves the town work and effort and time and resource in terms of going through that process again and recreating the wheel.
This effectively puts you in a situation having a joint contract with a provider?
It's not considered a joint contract. Our contract would just be piggybacking on the price that the other local government had established in their process, you know, through agreement with the provider, with the vendor. So the contract would be between the town and the vendor. But our pricing would be piggybacking upon that pricing established through the other RFP process.
So the vendor knows the participants in basically a multi-provider RFP. And so they're prepared to give a discounted price in effect for multiple participants volume.
Yes.
And that's what this is trying to get at.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I was completely confused by that. All right.
Mr. Chairman and David, can I just interject for a second? I note that on your screen, David, that you've got the what I assume to be the pension policy, and it shows a new section called benchmarks. And I'm looking 8.0, and my eyes happen to wander, and I just see it's there. And that does not reflect on the one on the policy, the draft policies that you sent us for this meeting. I guess the key, the thing I'm trying to mention is there's probably a number of changes that you've made that haven't gotten to us yet. And I don't know how many that is. I don't know whether it's easier for you to redistribute your more current version and let us take a stab at it and send you back comments when you've had a chance to look at it, or whether it's so minimal that you could go through it tonight. But it appears there are changes that you're working from that you've made, and that's good. But, we haven't seen them nor looked at them with the and I recognize that occurred, but I don't know how many that is.
Yeah, Vice Chair Latchford, members of the commission, this 8.0 benchmarks is actually, again, going back to the last meeting, that was a request of Chair Beasley that I included in the investment policy. This is not actually the PSPRS pension policy. Right. It's the right. investment policy.
Right. That's the first time I've seen it.
Yes.
It wasn't on the last copy. And that was the other question, was benchmarks, but that answers it too. So, yeah. I was just sort of one step behind in terms of the information that was provided.
Yeah, no, that's, again, that I apologize for that. That should not have happened. I thought that I was attaching the most recent, most current, and apparently somehow I loved it and attached the old version that you got last at the last meeting, which that wasn't helpful.
So probably one of two solutions, Mr. Chairman, is to have David send out the new policy or amend it with any changes that we're talking about tonight and resend that and let us handle it at the next meeting, or to let him send it out again tonight and we can respond to him individually, but eventually we have to bring it back through the commission so it's made public.
What's everybody thinking?
The lawyer would prefer that he sends it and so everybody can see it before the next meeting.
Okay.
Set it up for the next meeting.
Yeah, I strongly suspect certainly a lot of my comments on the investment side and maybe some others have already been accommodated based on last month's. So we're kind of beating a dead horse here.
Yes. David, if I can just jump ahead for 1 second, I don't want to interrupt this discussion if we're not finished, but I noted that in the current investment policy, there is a Section 8 for reporting, and that doesn't show up in the new policy, investment policy. Is that being deleted?
Yeah, Vice Chair Latchford, commissioners, that was the discussion that we had in relation to benchmarks. It was kind of all lumped together, and the comment I made, I believe I made it at the last commission meeting, was the challenge with providing quarterly updates to the town council, et cetera, that were in the current investment policy. And so I think Chair Beasley still had the concern that we dealt with the benchmark issue, which, again, that's what I was what you see on my screen, and hopefully you can read that, but really trying to keep it, you know, at that broad policy level of saying, okay, these are the benchmarks that we're going to establish for whether our utilization of investments through an investment firm, whether that is working for us or not, or whether we should just put it all with the state treasurer and the LGIP, and because they're actually, providing more benefit, more value to the town in terms of return and risk. So,
but you are saying here that performance is monitored quarterly.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, we currently, in fact, I've got a meeting scheduled. I believe it's tomorrow. If not tomorrow, it's sometime this week. I'd have to look at my calendar, but I've got another quarterly update with PFM, which is our investment advisor, to go over our portfolio and see whether we're meeting our objectives. That's part and parcel. Obviously, that's not entirely what I'm trying to get at here, but there does need to be some sort of analysis, and we talked about it at the last meeting, some sort of analysis that you know compares what our PFM investments and how those are doing, compares that to some sort of standard. And I think the best standard is probably the LGIP, which is managed by the state treasurer.
Can you share that report on a summary basis with us on a quarterly basis?
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't see any issue with that.
Okay.
Is there anything done now? Is that looked at now? Compared, looking at our returns compared to their returns?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's just not formal. It's more informal, and it's not reported on anywhere. But, you know, I think it is something that even a couple months ago I had a discussion with Wendy about, saying, okay, how did the LGIP do? How are we doing with PFM? Are we exceeding their performance or not? Because, I mean, if we're not going to exceed the state LGIP, then what are we doing? Why do we have money parked someplace else? Because, again, that is, in some cases, it's diversification, you know, where you know, you've got, you're diversifying where your money is placed. So that's reducing risk. But in another, in another way, it's increasing your risk because it's with a third party and it's not really, I don't know, some people believe the state to be a little bit more secure, that when your money's under you know, the state treasurer, that you're, even though your return may not be as great, but you've got more security in terms of the principal. You're not going to lose your money or have, you know, some kind of third party malfeasance going on.
Right. Okay.
Okay. All right, so you're going to update us with the current, send it out. Does anybody have any comments or suggestions on what they receive that maybe should be incorporated in any future changes? Like revenues or other things that we haven't yet discussed this evening?
Are we going to get into debt and the rest of the portions that we haven't discussed yet?
Yes.
But we don't have anything on debt.
Well, we haven't got to it yet. It's in the old, it's in the old policy. We just haven't got to it.
Yeah, I think
fund balance, some other stuff.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, can I walk you through the rest of the policy statements that we have here?
Yes, please.
Okay, so 1 point. To kind of bring us up to speed here. So we had 1.5 was presented at the last meeting, not a whole lot of changes there. So I don't want to spend too much time on that. I believe, in fact, I'm not sure there were any changes to the capital expenditures and improvements policy, but 1.6, this is a that's an addition to what you didn't see last month, and that's simply our PSPRS pension funding policy. What you see, the major change here is I included these definitions, which were included in the policy statements before. So I just kind of removed them out of the policy statements and threw them up in the definitions. But the policy in and of itself is the policy that was approved by council and that was recommended by you guys, the BFC. No changes there, really just more just formatting and structure than anything. You see the targets here, the 70% by 2024, 80% by 2028, 90% by 2032. That was obviously a pretty significant change from the prior year's policy. So, but basically what that is, you know, there was no changes, there will be no changes recommended there. It's just more just structure and formatting.
David, can you click on it so it just shows one sheet at a time, because your faces are covering up part of my second page.
Okay. Let me see if I can.
Okay. I don't know how you do it on that. Maybe you just click on it. No, that one doesn't work. No.
Is that better?
There you go.
And Commissioner Salverson, when you feel like you're ready, I can keep scrolling through.
So you want us to
just let me know.
So this is all the stuff that we already kind of went through, just to put it in policy format.
Yeah. I think this is basically what's already been approved by the town council last time around.
That's right? Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Looks good. So this will have to be updated at some point in the year, because you get new data. I don't know if you want to put, maybe that goes at the top of the policy that says, you know, this is updated in May, or, you know, whatever makes sense for that policy, incorporating when you get that data.
Right. Yeah, that's where we've got this information.
Yep. So I guess thinking about when you get the piece at the bottom would make the most sense, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Any questions about the PSPRS pension funding policy? Okay, the next one is revenues. It's 1-7. So this policy, again, kind of takes a lot of our current revenue policies, just kind of structures it a little bit differently. I didn't include any definitions in here. I just didn't know or think that they were necessary. But if you have some that you would like to like me to throw in and include, please let me know. Basically, you know, talking about diversification, user fees and charges, revenue estimates, collection and administration. But really, again, trying to incorporate current policies of the town, just, you know, just structuring them a little bit tighter.
Can I stop you 1 second, Dave?
Certainly.
2.0, actually the last complete sentence, it says user fees shall be reviewed on a regular basis. What is your thought process? Every year, biannually? I mean, is there something that we can pinpoint a little bit better than regular?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think it really depends on what type of user fee it is. There are certain fees that are required to be, you know, like impact fees are required to, you know, their state law that's governing and dictating how often those are reviewed and updated. So it really kind of, when I say regular basis, it's kind of intentionally broad, because it kind of depends on the situation and whether there's state law that's dictating how often it's looked at or not, and whether, you know, there's other factors there in terms of staff time and resource as well. So I think the key here is we want to remain competitive in the market. We want to make sure that that we are aware of different economic forces and factors going on, and that that if something shifts and changes, that we take, we don't wait too long to make those adjustments in our user fees and charges. So I apologize that it is really kind of meant to be intentionally vague. We just want to make sure that we do say that we're going to review things regularly, because we don't want to get behind the ball on some of these things and wait 10 years before we ever review them. But
maybe the thing to do is to reference the statutes as sort of a minimum review time frame, and simply categorize what these user fees and charges are relative to that statute. So, for instance, if we have to look at fees on recreation, that's, the state statute says whatever, and or fees for users for, other things. But to try to get a little bit more specific here so that it just pins it down a little bit.
I agree. That popped out at me as well. And I was thinking maybe a backup table that lists all the fees that has, it's probably a minimum of an annual review, right? And so maybe based on, if it's the pool, you do it in, before the pool opens. I don't know if there's some logic that would be applied, but maybe just a listing of all of them in the back, just to make sure that then they do get done and looked at.
Mr. Chairman, okay. May I weigh in when you get a moment?
Sure. Weigh in, Mary.
Thank you so much. I want to say that, so we have a variety of different user fees and charges, some of which are already delegated to staff by the council in the form of a policy. In other words, individual recreation fees and whatnot don't come to council. So the moment that we tie them in a financial policy, then they all have to come back to council, and that doesn't give us the flexibility that's needed to address market issues, changes and, things where we have to do things on a relatively quick basis. I will tell you that our fees are reviewed on an annual basis. Oftentimes they're reviewed and it's, nope, those are still good. What it is, for example, our permitting fees, they're looked at every year, but then it's looked at in terms of what are they in our communities and, that type of thing. And so it really is a direction to staff as opposed to the council being the ones looking at every one of those. And so all of them are a little bit different. I would hesitate to try to attach every single fee we have. Then all of a sudden we've got our fingerprint fee and our, our copying fee and all of that. We have fees and charges all over town for all kinds of different things. And those are really in the responsibility of each of our departments. So the policy direction is make sure you look at them, make sure you look at them regularly. But it brings in such a small amount of our overall revenue, with the exception of Parks and Rec. And those have to be nimble. They have to be nimble. And those already follow a town council policy that says, based on the number of people that it serves, there's a window as to how much cost recover we get. And then the rest is, it's a little bit of a tweaking. How much is too much? Will people come? That kind of thing. So there's a little bit of art to that in some of our areas.
Can you put a minimum of annually or once a year?
The question is, what happens if we don't? Do we just say we do? Or you remember we talked about Commissioner Salveson at the beginning. Don't put something in there that we're not going to hold ourselves to.
Yep. But I still do think that looking at the fees, I would think somebody should look at them at least once a year, right?
It's a lot of work to do a user fee analysis, a lot of work. If you're really doing some of the ones where it's a cost of service analysis, it's a significant amount of work. And the question is, what is our payback in terms of the amount of time that it takes to look at versus it goes up by $2 or $3, or in the case, a perfect example, the aquatic center. We look at that, absolutely. But there's also it's not just about the cost recovery. It's also about, if we push it up another dollar or two, are we going to lose, it's that balance. Are we going to lose people coming in? So those are looked at, if not every year, certainly very regularly.
Can you set a bogey and materiality to the town?
As in, it depends on how much revenue it brings in?
Yeah. I mean, if it's not material, who cares? But if it is...
typically the permitting... right. Permitting and inspection revenues typically are not reviewed every 5 years at max, because there is you get the whole development community that wants to be involved in that process and weigh in and, that kind of thing. And it just is not productive to then be doing that every single year. So, the point is that it's going to depend on each individual fee in each department every year. And so the broader that it is in terms of, hey, there's an expectation that it needs to be reviewed, but that was really a message to me as the manager for me to then go to the departments and say, okay, have you looked at our fees? What are they? And, how often do we need to review them?
Here's a question, Mary. So is there a list or a table of the fees that, do you know when they all were reviewed last? So maybe they don't all have to be reviewed all that often, but time goes by and maybe, 7 years has gone by and nobody's looked at it, but does anyone even know the last time it was reviewed? So maybe just keeping track of that would be something beneficial.
Sure. The fees that come before council end up being very, very political. that's just life, right? And so there's always that judge, is it now time to review them, the ones that have to go to council or not? So that's one of these, right?
I'm looking, which ones go to council? Looking to see if I can tell that based on this.
All of the development related ones, planning, permitting, and then the rest of them are kind of policies, cost recovery, that kind of thing. The courts has their own fees. They, the municipal judge has the ability to set those fees. Actually, those do come to council now that I mention it, but at the recommendation of the judge, and those don't change all that often.
You want to know when they were last reviewed. I understand what you're saying now. It makes more sense that you can't do all. It's a lot of work, and but maybe some of them should be reviewed every year, and maybe some of them it doesn't matter.
Right.
Kind of capturing them all together might be of benefit.
Right. Fair enough. I appreciate that feedback. Thank you.
Back to you, Dad.
Well, yeah. So, commissioners, what do you want to do with, has your opinion changed on this? Do you want to say strive to, to set a target, strive to review fees on an annual basis that kind of allows us to a little bit of wiggle room in terms of staff to try to hit that target if possible? Or do we just want to leave it as is? I'm just looking for direction here.
I don't think the staff should spend a lot of time on dime and nickel stuff. Mm-hmm. Certainly if it's material, even if it's political, there needs to be some kind of frequency definition, I guess, to doing it. I just hate the term regular.
So as a suggestion, strive to review or strive to review the fees, the material fees on an annual basis. Does that work for you?
I think that makes sense to me, but what do other people think?
Can you categorize them or something? Or is there like, you know, I mean, obviously there's some that you have to review every year. You probably know.
You could say on an annual basis as appropriate. I mean,
yeah, that kind of almost is the same as on a regular basis, but you know.
Well, some you may not need to review, and others you may.
Yeah.
A lot of times, user fees come up when a political issue comes up or some kind of situation comes up that people want to look at the user fee. So,
you know, what about? I don't know. I just keep getting back to my little table here, but what about some kind of summary sheet? It doesn't have to go anywhere, just so you know it, or, you know, David can see it at a glance, but, you know, a listing maybe of all the fees and when was the last time they were reviewed. And I mean, to me, a review doesn't have to be a big giant exercise. It means at least you have to look at it and see, does it make sense? But when was the last time it was updated or changed or increased? Is that something that makes sense for you? Do you want to know that? Does it matter? Maybe it doesn't matter. Right?
I mean, Commissioner Salverson, I think that certainly I, you know, like you, rely on my departments. They have the whole list of all of their fees because they do their revenue projections every year, and they provide us with that information. And so I'm betting that somewhere in our budget projections, we also have those because we project those out when we do our revenue projections. You know, are they something that I look at every single one? No, I have to admit I don't. But I appreciate the suggestion that as an organization, we should know what those are. And I will follow up with Dave and make sure that they're centralized in our budget office.
So do we want to change the language or leave it as is for now?
I guess my general comment would be that I think you've heard a lot of discussion, and I think there might be a preference to making some kind of a change. I'll let you work it out.
Okay. Fair enough. Are there any other questions or concerns with this page, or can we move forward?
Move forward.
David, just one question on that page.
Yes.
And this really isn't tied to any discussion about it. Is revenue collection and administration looks new. Is that new?
I don't believe it is. Let me, I'm thinking I took that right out of our current revenue policies. Let me scan back through because no, that actually is a new section. You're right, Vice Chair Latchford. That's a good catch.
I mean, it is a good policy. I was just wondering how it came to a level of recognition that it should be a policy. And whether that's something that we have issues with.
So when I go through this process, I look at other surrounding jurisdictions and what their policies are. And if I see something, you know, that's part and parcel to what I'm trying to do here in this update, and obviously what I'm asking and tasking, what the town manager has tasked you to do, that if we see a potential hole in a policy or see a place where we can strengthen existing policies, that we try to do so. So yeah, that's that was probably I don't remember this one specifically, but I believe it, you know, because I don't see it in our current existing policies, I think I stole it from a surrounding jurisdiction's policies.
I've always said plagiarism is just fine. Okay. I was just wondering whether there was an issue within our operations that we had to be concerned to make this a policy level, but I'll take it. It's not a bad, it's a good policy.
Okay. So moving forward, again, I think I know 6.0 and 7.0 are in the existing policies. I don't believe 5.0 is. I think that one is not covered in our existing policies. That would be another case where I have taken another jurisdiction's policies and tried to incorporate them. Again, I think it's a good policy to have, that if we've got old accounts receivable or things where we've exhausted our collection efforts, that we write that off, that we don't carry those balances indefinitely and overly inflate our accounts receivable.
So I would have a question about that one. And this time it's the word periodically.
Mm-hmm.
So again, is that something that is, it's probably a big deal to look at all, to review all of that, I would imagine. And you look at, you know, if something's, I don't know how past due it is when you determine I'm not going to get this money. Is that something that you have any more of a detail on how you do it?
Yeah, you know, this goes back to my auditing days, because we used to obviously audit accounts receivable. And so basically what periodically looks like to me is every fiscal year, I'm going to go through and look at our accounts receivable and reconcile them. And if I see something that is on there after a couple years or two or three years or whatever, I'm going to start asking questions about it and try to find out what the collectability of that receivable is. And if I find out that it's, that we've kind of exhausted all of our efforts, et cetera, that are available to the town and trying to collect, and it makes sense to write it off, especially if it's immaterial, then we're going to do so just to keep things current and clean.
Does the town have a contract with the collection agency?
Commissioner Mason, I don't know the answer to that question. Perhaps Wendy or Mary do. I'm not aware that we do. But I don't know for sure.
Does water handle all of its uncollectibles? Is there a process for that or a policy that says as far as when you turn water off or things like that?
Yes. Yeah. Water handles all of their collection activity.
Okay.
The courts have a collection agency, but it's run through the Arizona Supreme Court.
David, the only thing that I would add to this is that you might want to indicate who is accountable for approving the write-off.
Okay. That's a good comment. Vice Chair Latchford, thank you.
Does that get to a mayor and council level, or is that lower? Or does it depend on the amount? Or
yeah, I would think my preference is lower, but depending on amount. I mean, if there's something that's really, really significant, which I'm not sure what that would be, but if it's really, really major material to the town, then maybe we might consider the mayor and the council just to make sure that they understand what we're doing and why, and have some say in that. Any other questions, comments?
Does the golf course operation have its own uncollectible management system, like the water department?
Yes. Yeah. Chair Beasley, members of the commission, the golf course, that's what we pay Antares, our golf provider, to do, is to manage and maintain their their system of revenue collection and receivables collection. You know, I don't think they have very many receivables. I mean, just the type of business that they're in. Usually, you know, when someone goes to pay for a round of golf, they're doing it in real time. I don't know what receivables I don't know what receivables they would have. I mean, even the food and beverage operation that they run, it seems like that is all in real time. I don't think they would have very many receivables, if any. Okay. Well, let me walk that back as I'm thinking about it. The receivables they would have would all be on the member side. So as they bill for membership dues, I could see them having receivables for that. Does that make sense?
Or a bad credit card, I guess.
Yeah, but that's going to be insignificant.
That'd be small stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Moving forward, expenditures. Again, kind of like revenues. Tried to incorporate our current expenditure policies, may have added a couple. I don't remember which ones. No, I think all of these are pretty much, just scanning through this, I think all of these are pretty much included in our current expenditure policies, but I'm sure Vice Chair Latchford will find the one that's not.
Now, did you send these out before? Or?
I haven't seen this.
Yeah, no. This is the new updates that you should have received prior to this meeting.
Okay.
This we should have seen prior to the meeting, so we did not. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. Why don't you just walk us through these things, and I guess we'll just have to dig into the detail after we get it and send comments to you.
Certainly. So the 1.0 is dealing with the current funding basis. So basically, really similar to our budget policies that say that, you know, we just want to make sure that that we budget and are operating on a current basis, that we're not exceeding current revenues with our expenditures, or if we are, that's planned and budgeted, that there's some sort of structure in place there and an approval by council to dip into fund balance. Again, 2.0, a little bit similar to that, but basically what we're saying here is we want to avoid operating deficits. So if we start to see deficits where our revenue projections don't quite materialize, that we do things to dip in or to deal with the expenditure side of the equation. And that can include various means to do that, but, you know, it can include expenditure deferrals or short-term. Actually, we're going to avoid expenditure deferrals or short-term loans or use of one-time revenue sources. Basically, what we're talking about, hiring freeze, expenditure reductions or fee increases, or use of fund balance. So basically what we're just kind of saying that we're not going to try to play games when we run into a deficit situation, that we're going to deal with the situation and hit it head on, and not play games with how we deal with deficits. 3.0 is maintenance of capital assets. And that basically is just saying that we're going to maintain our assets and our infrastructure at a sufficient level, and try to minimize replacement and maintenance costs in future years. And then periodic program reviews. This one is basically dealing with the different programs in the town that we're going to review those. And I think this one actually may be a new one. I'm not sure this one's in our existing policies, but basically it's going to say that we're going to review our programs and say, okay, periodically, these are either working or they're not working. And if they're inefficient, then or ineffective, then we'll reduce or eliminate them. And then kind of a broad statement. Again, we already have a procurement policy separate to our financial policies, but this basically says, kind of a broad statement that we're going to comply with state law, maximize any discounts, and also utilize competitive bidding or cooperative purchase agreements to attain best possible price on goods and services.
So is there anything in your procurement code that's different from state that you want to reference your own procurement code here as well?
Repeat that, because I think I missed the first part of your statement.
Is there anything in your procurement code or that's different from state that you want to reference your procurement code in here as well, or your procurement policies?
I think my response right now at this point is no. I think because we have a separate procurement policy that's really pretty developed, basically I don't want to.
I was just thinking you could reference your procurement code per your procurement code, or like you did applicable state laws, if there was some additional ones other than that state law doesn't cover.
Okay. Let me make a note of that.
Yeah, you don't want to get wordy.
Okay. Other questions, comments on expenditures?
You referenced that you're going to take corrective action if there's an operating deficit that gets created because of expenditures. Yeah. Then you define what those corrective actions are. Is there a trigger point in terms of dollars or percentage of budget or anything like that creates these corrective actions? And there's a difference between a dollar deficit and $1 million deficit.
Right. Yeah, I think that's something that we could discuss. You're getting, again, kind of into that materiality discussion here. That's something that I could ponder. I'd have to think about that as to what that might look like. And really, it could vary from fund to fund, or from program to program. So
now that's an interesting question, because this policy is not necessarily directed at an individual fund.
Right.
It's directed at the total conglomerate.
Yes.
So theoretically, you could reduce in one fund, because you've done this, right? You could make a reduction in one fund to cover the increase in a different fund. I mean, could you do that?
Do you want to do that?
I mean, you're kind of getting into fund accounting, and the reason why we have these different funds set up.
Right.
The reason why we have these different funds set up is so that we can, number one, enhance accountability. Number two, enhance transparency, and to really track and demonstrate these are where these resources are being utilized. These are how they're being utilized. So if we have a deficit situation in one fund, typically we don't start charging cost to that fund into a different fund, because that other fund may have a surplus. Mm-hmm. Typically what happens in reality is if a fund runs into a deficit situation or even negative cash, there's a due to due from and a borrowing, internal borrowing mechanism that takes place in those funds to where, and then there needs to be a plan for the fund that's in a deficit situation that potentially has negative cash. There needs to be a plan for repayment to the fund that it's borrowing that cash from.
So you would never change a budget. You would never change or look at the total year end. If one fund, say, was operating at a big surplus, you would never allow another fund to increase because you have a total amount of money that, okay.
Yeah, I mean, these funds are really set up because a lot of times, in many cases, they're restricted. Mm-hmm. They're very specific. Utilize our street fund as an example, where we've got our highway user revenues coming in as the revenue source. They have to be utilized for street maintenance. And so, you know, so if we're, you know, running that fund into the red and depleting, we're not going to start charging street maintenance costs in the general fund.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
Well, in your current policy, you had items listed that you could do transfers based on certain approvals and stuff, and that's probably worth keeping. You know, I sent in the information that I sent you, Dave, on some additions.
Yeah.
I added some things in the expenditure. If you want to just take a look at those and
for see sure.
if anything's worth keeping, and you can do that.
No, I thank you for that, Commissioner Mason. That will get taken care of. Yeah, absolutely. I'll take a look at that. And the transfers issue, that is typically, you know, how you move money from one fund to the next. But usually, I mean, almost always, you're doing that through a budget process, so it's planned.
Right.
So and that gets approved by council, and obviously gets that full transparent view through that budget process. So
that was in your previous policy, so it's probably worth
keeping
it in this as well.
Correct.
Let me ask a question here, if I can maybe help us move this forward. This evening we received a two-month report on the financial results for the town. And based upon the definition that you have in this particular section, would that be triggered based upon those reports for the first 2 months, the ones through August?
That's an interesting question, Vice Chair Latchford. I'm not sure that it necessarily would. I think, you know, this is something, well, potentially. I mean, I think it really depends on the situation and how deep of a deficit we're running and what the cause of that deficit is. Is it, I mean, obviously a deficit is going to be caused by one of two things. It's either going to be your revenues didn't materialize, so you're bringing in much less revenues than what you had forecasted, or your expenditures have kind of gone through the roof and there was something crazy that happened there. So I think it really, it depends, and part of that, what it depends upon is whether we think we're going to recover, because sometimes there's seasonality to revenue collection. Sure. And we all understand that, and even on the expenditure side. So
that's an excellent response. And what I was trying to get to is that you could look at the results that have come through from as of August 2020 and say, you know, look, we just triggered policy 2.0, avoidance of operating deficits. But management has to make a requisite determination as to whether or not that should require additional action on their part, as well as bringing that forward to the town council. So I'm wondering, and I throw this out for the commission members to speak to, but I'm wondering if we really want to get this detailed in this particular section of the policy. I mean, I think you could just simply go global and say, let's have management evaluate and present corrective actions that might be necessary to take to the town council for their information and approval, and just quickly exit and say that's good enough, because who knows? I mean, right now, the way I read it, you probably need to put together a corrective action plan for the first 2 months. And I don't think that's what you were attempting. And you did. You said you weren't. And I think I agree with you 100% on that.
Yeah, the policy right now is it restates immediate corrective action. So I think you need to tone that down a little bit and make it more judgmental.
Okay.
Well, it says immediate action if it's projected to be a deficit by year end. I think that's the difference. I don't think we're requiring immediate action based on this policy. It just says if there is something that you're predicting that by the year end it's going to be a deficit, that you might want to take action. And here are some of the actions you may take as appropriate. I mean, that'll be decided by management.
Yeah, I think this was, you know, the perfect example for this policy and how it came into play was COVID, right?
Right.
So we had something that was unanticipated in March that kind of popped up overnight. We thought that there were going to be, it completely shifted our revenue forecast for the balance of the fiscal year. And so we took some immediate corrective action to try to deal with that so that we could try to avoid an operating deficit at year end, which we were successful at doing.
Right.
So to me, that really is the situation that, you know, is kind of the most recent current example of how this policy comes into play.
I guess I'd still remove the word immediate and just say take corrective actions.
Okay.
Dave, Chair Beasley, if I may offer up a suggestion. You know, the statement I think is valuable in the policy, but Dave may be suggesting clarifying the deficit in excess of a budgeted or planned deficit, because we do have fiscal years where we plan to use fund balance. And I'm just kind of noticing that there's no real difference noted with that. I'm just offering that up as a suggestion.
That's a good point.
Well, I think we need to look at the difference between an operating deficit and using fund balance. I mean, the way the city budgets, they basically are using fund balance as a revenue to use. It's a planned use of fund balance. I mean, you use the term deficit fund balance, but it's not really an operating deficit from the perspective that you have to take action. You basically planned to use that fund balance for purposes in your budget. So, I mean, I think it's a little different than from the COVID situation where you had to make definite changes in order to not have problems by the end of the year. So a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. I just wouldn't want to get held up on, you know, the argument coming across as, well, you know, that is an operating deficit or that isn't an operating deficit. And just maybe that clarification would be a good idea.
That would be fine.
Change the avoidance of operating deficits to different terminology for the opening of that paragraph?
Certainly.
What about just avoidance of deficits? Or unexpected deficits? As you say, you may budget for a deficit.
You can let Dave be creative for it.
Yeah, I think so. Put it in order.
Give him some time to think about it.
I like unexpected deficits.
So be it.
Anything else on this page? Okay, can we move on to the next policy then?
Okay.
So the next one is debt. And again, a lot of these policies are currently existing in our policies as a town. So just kind of trying to incorporate them in a little more structured format. I don't think I don't think there's anything here that is included that didn't exist prior. There may be one in there that's the off that I'm not remembering, but.
And you're not issuing commercial paper.
Right. Well, yeah, we're not issuing commercial. I could probably delete that.
I was thinking of one comment that I made in here that in your previous policy, you talked about voter debt, voter approved debt, and non-voter approved debt. And I think that the town seems to use non-voter approved debt. So I was wondering if you wanted to have some wording that would explain or what is your policy for using or deciding which type of debt that you want to use.
That's a good comment. Thank you. I'll chew on that one.
And I guess here's where I wanted to talk about your excise tax, because the policy of your non voter approved debt is you're paying it off with a dedicated revenue source that you call excise tax, but you never really explain what the excise tax is. And I was looking at the CAFR from 2019, and you have a table in there that says historical and projected excise tax collections. So I'm assuming from this that when you say excise tax, you're meaning the town sales and franchise taxes, license and permits, fines, state shared sales tax, and state shared income tax. Is that a true statement?
Yes.
Because then I would think that there ought to be, I don't know if you need that in the policy, but it just seems we use the term excise tax and sales tax kind of interchangeably, and really excise tax is a different animal, and maybe that should be brought out.
So Commissioner Mason, are you seeing excise tax in the policy before you this evening?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Are you seeing excise tax in the policy that's before you this evening?
Well, you use in your previous policies, excise tax was used from the viewpoint of paying your debt, and some of that you may have taken out in here, yeah. But I think it would be kind of beneficial from the policy, since you use non-voter approved debt, and that debt is covered by a dedicated revenue that you call excise tax. And so if that's your policy, then to me there ought to be some explanation of what your excise tax is. And I noticed the table in the back of the CAFR provides a pretty good evidence of that, so maybe you reference that.
Okay.
And then on top of that, I was wondering, from a viewpoint of like with water, you have kind of a debt service coverage. So I'm wondering, do you, and this is a question more than, do you want to have kind of a percentage of what your governmental debt would be covered using your excise tax? I guess as an example, you have a pledge revenue note in the financials,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of talks about it. But in your note, you talk about you're comparing your debt service debt to gross revenues when it should probably be compared to excise tax, because that's what you're pledging. And I don't know if you would like to have, you know, what percentage of your excise tax is being used for debt service that may be higher than what you want, and do you want to have some kind of a
you know, a limit that kind of gives you for decision making that maybe you don't want to use 50% of your excise tax for paying debt service. That would be too high. What would be a good percentage if that's something you'd want to do?
Okay.
David, why is 6.0 in there?
Chair Beasley, members of the commission, this is in there just to state that because some school districts and other types of governments are restricted on how they utilize their interest, their investment earnings on bond proceeds. And so in some cases, those restrictions are, well, you have to utilize it for debt service. And this is in there just to say, well, the town's going to have the option to either utilize those investment earnings for capital improvements, meaning that all bond proceeds plus the investment earnings on those bond proceeds or debt proceeds will be funding improvements or capital improvements, or it can be also be utilized for debt service on paying down the debt that was taken out. So it's just providing flexibility for the town. Because there are some restrictions sometimes in other types of governmental organizations.
If you scroll up and you're talking about arbitrage rebates.
Yes.
I guess I don't quite understand why 6.0 really belongs in here. Essentially, you're restricted on how much you can earn from investing bond proceeds.
Right.
But they can go into the general proceeds for utilization. So trying to track a dollar and a dollar and a dollar is kind of tough. So if you're going to recognize that you've got an arbitrage rebate issue that you're going to manage against, who cares where the money goes?
Yeah, I think this 6.0, let me take a different approach with this. So 6.0, I just mentioned one situation where in certain governments, they have to utilize those investment earnings for debt service. They can't utilize them, you know, to deal with potentially inflation costs on a project that wasn't anticipated. So that's one instance. The other instance is that some governments, if there's not a policy here, they can take that investment earnings on bond proceeds and utilize them and throw them into the general fund to where they're not even utilized for a capital project. So this in effect, 6.0, not only does it provide flexibility, but it also provides a collar on how those investment earnings are utilized. Does that make sense?
Not really, not to me, because I think 5.0 is your collar. That strangles you as to what you can do in terms of earnings on those proceeds while it is in cash pending spending on a specific project.
Yeah.
6.0 doesn't do anything. And you're not just any government. You're the town of Oral Valley.
Dave, a question for you. Does arbitrage apply to your non-debt?
I'm sorry.
The debt that you have right now with the city, your non-voter approved debt, does arbitrage apply to that, or is it just...
Yeah, arbitrage applies to all of the town's debt, to my knowledge. I'm not sure that there's any distinction whether it's voter approved or non-voter approved.
Okay, I didn't remember. It's been a while. But I guess to me the difference between 5 and 6 is 5 limits how much interest you can earn. You can still earn interest.
Right.
Sometimes in your bond documents, it puts limits on what you can use that additional money for.
Right.
The case here usually allows you to use it for additional projects or
you could put it on debt service. Because I know with the city of Tucson, for example, they had certificates of deposits, certificates, I forget the name now, but they're more like leases, and they were strictly, you know, structured on what you could use your interest for. So,
I think those are certificates of participation.
The two are different, and I think you'd probably want both of them there.
Yeah, I think you're referring to certificates of participation.
Yes, that's correct.
POPs?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Commissioner Mason. Chairman Beasley, 5.0 just provides a collar on how much you can earn, that you can't basically utilize the bond proceeds and the tax exempt status of the town to earn, to basically earn in excess of
what your cost of money is.
Right, what your cost of money is. That's correct. So that's really placing a limit on the earnings on the investment. But 6.0 says is placing a limitation on, even though you're limited on the earnings, how those earnings are utilized.
I guess I'm questioning why you would even want 6.0 in there.
I don't think so. I mean, from my standpoint, 6.0 is all like, and I'll use the example again. If we're earning money, even if it's limited, due to bond proceeds that have been issued, that money we want to keep either on paying down the existing debt service, or paying, paying for the inflation on improvements that we maybe didn't anticipate, or change orders or whatever else on the projects that we issued the debt for. And we're not utilizing it to fund operational costs, personnel, other types of ongoing operational costs of the town. To me, that's not an appropriate utilization of those investment earnings on bond proceeds.
Wouldn't your indenture agreement cover all this stuff?
No, not necessarily. No.
Okay.
Are we good with kind of page one here? Can I scroll down to page two?
Town or its financial advisor, 8.0. Financial advisor is going to be acting on your behalf. So why have both in there? It's basically the town that's doing the analysis.
Yeah, so Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, it's the town's option and discretion whether we want to employ a financial advisor or not, which would be a third party advisor to come in and represent the town's interests in a debt issuance or a refunding. So this just is recognizing that in some cases the town can has the discretion. It doesn't have to hire a financial advisor. The town can do this analysis on itself or for its by itself internally, or it can pay someone, an FA, to come in and do that analysis for it, depending on the complexity of the deal, et cetera. So I think where we're, to be candid, where we're going is likely we're going to be utilizing, and I don't know what we've done historically, but we're likely going to be utilizing financial advisors in the future. Just as a, I talked about even in my staff liaison report this evening, we're looking at doing a refunding of some water revenue debt. revenue bonds and some loans. In that case, because the amounts are so small and the margins are so tight, I made the decision that we're not going to hire an FA. However, in future issuances that the town is looking at undertaking, we don't really have any plan this year, but in future years, probably next year, it's likely on those issuances that we would bring an FA on board to represent the town's interests, just to make sure that that we are getting competitive pricing on the issuance.
Explain that to me, please.
So this one is actually a pull in from a surrounding jurisdiction. I think it's, I don't know exactly where this may come into play. I think it's just, it's a flexibility type issue. We do have some projects, especially as we look, the water project that we're looking at for the, where we're partnering with Metro Water and Town of Marana and then Town of Oro Valley. Obviously, we're all separate water jurisdictions. We're not going to issue debt, I guess, in kind of a combined issuance, so to speak, with all three water providers. But there are some instances where this, I think there, this could come into play. I think it's just, what we're saying here is we just want to communicate our plans, and if there's a way to coordinate, if there's a way to save money, if there's a way to be more efficient, then we'll examine that. I don't want to have the town's hands tied, so to speak. It's unlikely that this may ever come into play, truthfully, but just having some flexibility there to really expand or to examine what our options are with debt issuance. So
you're kind of talking about overlapping debt, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you got into a voter approved bond issue where you get into property tax, that's probably where you'll see this.
Yeah, right. And right now, of course, the town doesn't have a property tax currently. So again, this is unlikely that this would ever come into play. I mean, I'm fine with deleting it, honestly, if you want to delete it. It just, to me, it was something I was like, oh, that's weak. Okay, let's take a look at that and see what that might look like. But
I just don't say it does anything for you at this point.
Yeah, it really doesn't.
End of the first sentence. By the type of project to be constructed.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in reality, this percentage limitation, your debt limits, it focuses on different uses of money. Is it really realistic?
For us, it's not really applicable. Currently, I mean, it's something that we have to report on in our CAFR. It's a compliance issue because it is in the state constitution. So I don't know. I think it's just trying to highlight that, yeah, this, we need to be aware of these limits. Obviously, the town's not anywhere close to these. The town's been very, you know, it's very under-leveraged from a debt issuance standpoint. You know, so it's not really applicable, but it is something that we, you know, in the future, we need to be aware of just in case.
Now, our water utility is a separate enterprise fund.
Yes.
So how does that link to this 20% limit that's spelled out here?
The water is included in the 20% limit. It's not included in the 6% limit.
And even with it being an enterprise fund, it's still linked to the town's limitation.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, it still falls under the umbrella of the town.
Okay. So this just tells us what Arizona limitations are.
Correct.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments on page 2 of the debt policy? Mm-hmm. I'm good with deleting this. Okay, fund balance. And I think this is the last one. So the town currently has a fund balance policy. The differences here, again, really tried to highlight these definitions that are GASB 54 definitions. So they are the designations or the categories of fund balance that's included in GASB 54 that all governments should be reporting based upon. The policy itself, just like the PSPRS policy, is pretty much verbatim to what our existing GASB 54 fund balance policy is. You see the table in here that kind of says how these funds are going to be reported, how their fund balance is going to be reported, whether it's restricted, committed, assigned, or unassigned. Talks about authorization. Utilization of fund balance must be authorized by town council. Talks about utilization priority, which I like this policy because it's very linear and it makes sense that we're going to utilize the resources that are most restricted first to the extent that we can, and then to going towards the least restricted. So we're preserving the types of the fund balances that are least restricted. We're preserving those to the extent possible and not spending those and then, you know, not being able to spend the most restricted because we kind of lost an opportunity to do so there. The Water Enterprise Fund talks about, this is necessary due to our debt covenants and our debt issuances in the Water Enterprise Fund. So obviously we want to keep this policy intact, not do too much monkeying with it. And then annual review that we're just going to evaluate. And this is kind of, you know, again, kind of looking at the town as a whole, how we're doing from year to year, and incorporate any use requirements in the long-term financial forecast of the town. So shouldn't be a whole lot of surprise with this policy. A lot of these policies should be familiar to you, just structured a little bit differently than what we've done in the past. A
couple things. Can you go up a little bit?
Yes, sir.
Toward the beginning, just some thoughts here on your committed fund balance. I think I put a comment in there about town council action must be taken on or before June 30th of the applicable fiscal year. So in other words, if you have a committed balance that the town council has to do a resolution on, it has to be done before 30 June. Otherwise, you'd have to wait till the next fiscal year.
Okay.
And then
on your assigned fund balance. Your last sentence there, you have such intent needs to be established by either the highest level of decision making or by the an official designated by for that purpose. Isn't the town manager designated for that? So you could just put by the town manager.
Yeah, I think it could be the town manager, or it could be myself, honestly, if that was delegated.
So how, I mean, how is it done here? I would just put whatever is it you, or is it the town manager?
I think, well, I don't know how we've done things historically, honestly.
It could be town manager or designee.
Yeah, I think, that's covered by an official designated for that purpose. So, I don't know.
Just put who is designated, because you'd probably have a designated person.
Okay.
Or do you, I guess.
I'll just put the town manager.
And then the matrix that you show further down, I was just wondering if you really want to keep that. That seems to be awful detailed for a policy. I mean, it's kind of covered in verbiage up before that, so I don't know if that's kind of up to you. I mean, it's not right or it's not wrong. It's just whether or not you want to have that level of detail.
Yeah, I think the reason why I include this level of detail, and normally I wouldn't, but it's because our auditors look at this policy and they follow it by the letter of the law. I mean, they just literally, you know, they really focus in, and this really does dictate how we report on fund balance in our financial statements. So to me, it's just trying to be very clear with our auditors that this is how we intend to do things as a town. This is what our policy is.
And that's, I just noticed that your compensated absences and unemployment claims in your 19 CAFR, they were committed. So I was wondering if that was something special.
Commissioner Mason, that's exactly right. And the reason why they were shown as committed is because our policy said that they were committed. And so the auditors made that. And I to me, that's not many places I've seen show that, other governments, they show their compensated absences liability as being unassigned, or their fund balance related to that as being unassigned. We were, I think, an exception to the rule, and that we were showing it as being committed. I don't think it needs to be committed. Assigned is kind of a happy medium between the two, between unassigned and committed. So,
yeah, that's fine. I was just curious. And also, can you explain number item four there, town council authorization? What are you trying to?
I think number four is just saying that that staff is not going to appropriate or utilize fund balance reserves without town council authorization.
Well, I mean, you have the various categories. So you're saying if you have grant funds that are showing restricted, you're going to have, well, you'll get appropriated, I guess, as part of your budget. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine.
Yep.
Were you guys interested in changing your 25%? I know we've had some discussion on it, but I was wondering if that's something you wanted to change, or you wanted to leave it, or what were your thoughts on that?
My thought is at this point to leave it, just because it's been so highly publicized. Obviously, a lot of discussion, even in town council meetings, through budget sessions and so forth. I think that's, I was when we initially got going along this path of looking at policies, I was thinking we may want to revisit it. Just because of COVID and whatever, is 25% still adequate? Should it be 30? Should it be 35? What really provides a reasonable amount of coverage for the town? Part of when you look at this, that you need to, I think you need to consider is the diversification of the revenue sources and the stability and the volatility of those revenue sources. And obviously the town being so so dependent upon sales taxes and state revenue sharing, those are really pretty volatile revenue sources. So to me, that it's that type of thought process that we need to think about as to whether 25% is reasonable and adequate moving forward. My thought process right now is we're well over 25%, as you're well aware, so it's not really an issue. I think if we started getting down to 30, or then maybe we need to take a look at it as to whether that's still reasonable or not, because this is a larger discussion and a larger thought process that needs to be had on this, rather than just, you know, willy-nilly, well, you know, I like 17% or I like 25 or I like 30. I mean, there really needs to be some sort of, some sort of rational thought process and reasonableness that is applied to this policy.
Should something be in here that would describe what would be necessary to change that percentage? I mean, we don't have to go into a huge amount of detail, but that percentage ultimately is approved by the town council.
That's right.
As a policy. And how frequently does that get looked at? Or under what circumstances does it get looked at?
Sorry, I'm just jotting notes. Because these are good questions, good comments, Chair. I agree. I don't want to lose it.
I think, number one, don't you have the wrong caption there? Because you're saying the unassigned fund balance is 25%. Shouldn't that be the committed?
Well, it's a reserve fund balance.
Well, you're unassigned because the 25% is usually, it's your committed.
It's your reserve.
Committed. So I think it should be committed fund balance instead of unassigned.
Isn't it a general fund reserve?
Fund balance.
Mary, what's your comment on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. It's always good to have a conversation about something of this nature in terms of the policy. And honestly, it is a careful balance between wanting to ensure that the organization has a rainy day fund for unexpected things that may come up, while also not trying to set aside so much money that it can't benefit the community, because of course these are the community's dollars. In my experience, I think that 25% is a, if you look at some comparisons of a lot of other communities, I think what you would find is 25% is a very reasonable number, because it does provide that great foundation. And while if we did it at, 30%, it would be kind of a one-shot increase. And my recommendation is if we would be moving it up, that we would do it gradually, that we wouldn't necessarily that it could be, we'd strive to 30% over the next 5 years or something like that. I think it makes it, because we don't really know what's going to happen next year versus the capital demands that maybe there's an interest in wanting to utilize these excess reserves for capital projects that would benefit the community. And so I do think it might be beneficial, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, if we if we got some comparison information from other communities, sometimes that's a good gauge to see what other communities are doing. And, you know, are we in the middle? Are we on the high end? Are we on the low end? And that might also give us, you know, a better idea as to our other communities beginning to adjust their fund balances. But I do agree with Dave that, you know, it needs to be done thoughtfully. And fortunately, we do have those excess reserves that have been extremely beneficial to us this year in a COVID situation. We hope that we would only use that in an extreme emergency. But as one person said to me, you know, how much more of a rainy day can COVID be? You know, like it's been a pretty rainy day, right? It's been a pretty rainy 2020. And with actions taken on both sides, with expenditure cuts and, you know, we saw some of those revenue losses, we were still able to manage our finances pretty handily. So, but if that's something that the commission would like to see, we can do some research and bring that to you at the next meeting for some further conversation.
I'm not certain that we're challenging the 25%.
No, of course not.
Other than simply to say that there probably should be a process over time of looking at that. And whether it's too high or too low, I don't think it's something that we could sit down and challenge right now. But you'd like to see this read the Town of Oro Valley Rainy Day Fund? Is that?
No, but sometimes that has a way of getting people to understand what it is.
Got it. But I think that does need to be looked at over time, and maybe we need to define here how it could be changed, or that it is something that the town council reviews based on recommendations from town staff, you know, et cetera, whatever it happens to be.
I wonder if some consideration over the capital budget and what those unneeds met are might be an interesting, if we were thinking about increasing it, to think about what that other number might mean to relate to the 25%. Like perhaps if we know that, you know, 30% would be okay, but if we know that the approved capital needs moving forward are bigger at some point than 25% is more reasonable. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, Commissioner Newell, members of the commission, I think it does. I think, you know, when we look at the percentage, we need to do a full 360 on this. We don't need to, you know, we don't want to pigeonhole ourselves and just look at one aspect of it. We need to look at it really from all angles, and certainly the capital budget of the town is a significant outlay. It's a significant resource that's necessary, and I think that's part of the equation. Certainly, I want to briefly hit on Commissioner Mason's comments as to whether this should be committed fund balance, whether it should read general fund committed fund balance, or whether it should be unassigned. And basically, what I, you know, as you're all aware, committed has more restrictions on it than unassigned. If you look at our current policy, you won't see anything that really dictates, you know, it just says 25% of the general fund's annual expenditures. The fund balance contingency reserve should represent 25% of the general fund's annual expenditures. It does not specify whether it's non-spendable, restricted, committed, assigned, or unassigned. Certainly when we say that it's that we're looking for a target, and that's really what we're trying to establish here with the 25% with the policy as it's written, is this is a target, shall strive. So that's meaning that we're setting a target here, and we're saying that we want it to be unassigned, which has the least amount of restrictions on that, which has not been part of the discussion in the current existing town policy. So So when we say in the existing town policy that it's 25% of general operating expenditures, that's what we want our fund balance to be, and that way, you know, and we're safe. Well, not necessarily if most of that 25% is committed or restricted or even non-spendable. That really doesn't help us out as a town. So I think as we go through this, and, you know, this is part of what I'm going to do or need to do when we go through and draft the CAFR this year and really look at what our, you know, go through the calculations of what our unassigned fund balance is. I think what we're going to find out is our unassigned fund balance is actually less than 25%. I don't know that.
Aren't we getting confused here? Because under your current policy, the fund balance contingency reserve, the 25% is a committed balance. Okay, and that's your, if you want to call it your rainy day fund, that's already established in your policy now. And the only thing that can change that or require use from that is another resolution from mayor and council, because you must have a resolution that sets up this fund balance contingency reserve of 25%. That's the 10 million that you show in fund balance.
Right.
Well, I think right here, unless you meant to change it, that the general fund unassigned, that almost should be labeled as your mayor and council fund balance contingency reserve, because that's what that 25% is right now. And that's what's in your current policy right now. So are you wanting to change that and get rid of that contingency, that committed balance, and put it all back into unassigned? Because if you do that, you're going to have a resolution to do it.
Right. No, I Commissioner Mason, you're absolutely correct, and I understand where you're coming from. Yeah, I think I'm open either way. I mean, to me, this policy 1.0 is all about protecting the town. I think we can all agree upon that. So,
yeah. Well, I'm not talking.
It's a matter of how we. It's really, to me, it's a matter of how we report it and what restrictions are on that money. And I think from my standpoint, the current policy makes it more challenging, because sure, you don't know whether the commitment, whether what's being shown as the commitment is really unassigned money that you have complete flexibility whether the town has complete flexibility to dip into that pot, whether the town council, I should say, has the flexibility to dip into that, or whether there are other types of restrictions on that money, because we do show it as committed, but there may be other commitments or restrictions on that money even beyond the committed amount that we're showing. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
I doubt it, because I think your policy was you were just setting up a rainy day fund. You call it a contingency. You set that up, and I think the fund balance requirements from the GASB said if you want to do that,
right,
then the mayor and council has to set it up.
Right.
They have to approve it to use it. So what this is telling me is you want to get rid of the committed $10 million that you have, throw everything down into unassigned, and then set your limitation based on the unassigned balance and not this about set up in your committed category.
Yeah, and I think
you're changing policy here then. Is that what you want to do?
Right. Yeah, and I think I am. So this is, you know, this is a draft. I am open either way, because I think you, as I'm thinking through it, I think you end up at the same point, but it's just what bucket are you placing that money
in? Absolutely. So it's just a matter of what you as a town want to be your policy. But what you're saying here is you're changing your current policy. And if that's what you want to do, that's okay. But I think mayor and council is going to have to approve that
right
portion of it.
That's correct. Yeah. And so I guess the question is, there's more, and I don't know if you'll agree with this, Commissioner Mason, but as I'm thinking through this, I'm probably wrong, but I think there's more flexibility in what's being proposed here than what our current policy allows.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the question is, do we want more flexibility or do we not? Is that necessary or is it not?
I guess the question is, do you want to have mayor and council approve it or do you want to have some, the town manager or you? Because if it's in on a sign, that can be used whenever you want to. There's no real restriction to that 25% unless you just want to do it as kind of a guide. There's no real hard, fast restriction in that case. It could be used as part of your budget process. And if you want to spend it down below 25, mayor and council approves your budget. So in essence, they're approving.
Right. Agreed.
Well, I think I could just add a short comment here. You know, we've taken the approach on all of our other policies not to make policy changes by this process of rearranging them and making them reformatted. So I think if you wanted to have a change, and I agree with Commissioner Mason that you would need to get the town council to agree to that and pass that resolution to change the characterization of them, that you want to do that as a separate project and not in the middle of this one.
Okay.
I think it's significant enough, in my opinion, maybe the others will feel differently, that you probably should take this as a separate issue to, and maybe even a recommendation. Be interesting. I agree with Mary. It'd be interesting to see what some of the other towns are doing, but I don't think I would take this and wrap it up into our current project. I think that would raise too much issue with getting this particular project done.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I think what we'll do is we'll go back to what was included in the prior policy. We'll tweak this language in here so that it remains consistent. It has served us well, certainly, very well. And we all know the purpose behind it. And that will not continue. So we really appreciate your input this evening.
So Commissioner Mason, do you see the changes that I just made? Do those work for you?
Yeah, you just basically put it back to what you are now.
Right.
Which is good. Until you're ready to change it.
Right.
I think you've got two funds there in the first line.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, and that's intentional because we're dealing with the general fund specifically and the fund balance of the general fund. So I know it reads kind of funky, but I don't know any other way to do it.
Okay. All right. Okay. So you're going to send out all of these updates to us. And the expectation is that our November meeting will be the last pass at this stuff.
Correct.
So to that end, I would hope that all of the commissioners, when they receive this information, would give feedback directly to you in the interim so that we can have as an efficient meeting as possible in November.
Yeah, and I think, and I'll try to get drafts out to you. Well, I can definitely get this draft out to you immediately following this meeting. Moving forward, you know, there are a couple other holes that I see in our current policies that I'd like to address that that you'll see hopefully in future drafts, hopefully prior to the next meeting as well. And those holes are a grants policy. We don't have a policy that deals with grants, so I'd like to have feedback on that. I'd like to propose a draft on that. We need, in my opinion, a policy on accounting, auditing, and financial reporting. So we don't, I don't think we have a current policy on that. So I'd like to include a draft on that one, and then internal controls. And so those are kind of the three, holes. They're not critical. I think our policies, again, I sound like a broken record, but our policies have served the town very, very well, our financial policies. So this is not in any way trying to say that if we don't deal with these items that the town's going to fall into financial disrepair. That is far from the case. But I feel like this is just an opportunity to strengthen our existing policies and put forth hopefully some positive changes that will help the town even moving forward and navigating whatever next financial crisis is around the bend.
In your previous policy, you had financial reporting policies. Did you have anything below item 7 here, or are you just going to provide that next time?
Yeah, I'll provide it next time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have anything else, David, for us?
I think that's enough, Jared.
All right. Sounds good. Do we have any future agenda items that we should bring out? I'm not certain whether the future agenda item should be the investment report. I think that's something that we should like to see.
Chair, members of the commission, there's a couple ways. Obviously, we could agendize this, or I could try to handle it in the staff liaison report. I'm open to your comments on how you want to handle that.
Mr. Chairman, I'll discuss that with Mr. Gephardt and we'll figure that out. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I think we just like to get some information and just be brought up to date. That's all. So. Anybody else have anything?
Let's get through the policies.
Okay, yeah, good idea. Yeah. There's a lot there. Okay. Well, do I hear a motion to adjourn this meeting?
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very
Aye.
Much. Thank you, everyone. There's been a lot of work done here, and I think we're making some very, very good progress.
Thank you.
Stay
Appreciate all your comments.
Yeah, a lot of work.
Thank you, David.
Take care. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.